Gotcha. Give mind to things you've tried. I'm the one that can satisfy you.
Welcome to Knotcast, episode 182, 50 Shades of Dongs.
No, 50 Shades of Gay.
50 Shades of Gray. Gay.
You're terrible at this.
I'm terrible at this.
And your Gottfried is horrible.
Yeah, well.
You'll never be able to play Iago at this rate.
I'll never be a parrot. And then Saverin reached over and touched my clitoris. He used his thumb to rotate around, and then he dumped it, that asshole. That, why would he even think
I
want to
claim that ass?
You'll get this joke later if you haven't already.
Anyways, hi guys, we survived the trip. I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And I'm Webster.
She was not able to join us tonight, so we're ships passing in the night. Something like that. And so we're here.
We don't advocate shipping.
Sure we do. Shipping's fun.
Well, I ship.
Yeah.
I ship books, motherfucker. Woo!
Lots of books, as our Anthrocon adventure tale will reveal.
Indeed.
And this week's sponsor is now...
Hurtplanet.com.
Yeah, Hurtplanet.com. Buy books, motherfucker!
Read a book, read a book.
So, Fuzz and I just made it back from Anthrocon.
So, nothing happened this week of note.
Really? I mean, did anything happen to you? My week was like, I came home and got food poisoning. And was kind of miserable for a couple days.
Wait, no, are you being sick? Oh, I was joking. Like, nothing happened since the last time we recorded, you know?
But, well, it's like, wait. This week's been just like, I came home, there was a pile of laundry to do, and dishes, and the usual, as you would expect, I've been gone like a week.
See, I had the advantage of there were no dishes because my mate was with me at the con, not home fucking up my apartment. Not that Panther was fucking up the apartment.
I'm
saying there wasn't anybody left at home to undo any of the cleaning.
It was really nice, though, just to come home and kind of keel over dead for a day or two.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the food poisoning part sucked. Because, I mean, I'm really glad it happened after the trip and not during.
Don't touch those lead-based foxes.
I know. God. Somebody must have been using asbestos for their fur. On the first suit.
China's lead-based lube. Why does my cock feel so heavy?
Somebody took their old-school plumbing a little too far.
Oh. Went to plumb your depths.
But, I mean, I saw my parents for my birthday, you know, because they were going out of town this weekend. My birthday's this weekend.
Yeah.
So I saw them yesterday, did lunch with them. That's pretty much been my week.
So, because I just got done with For Planet's biggest event of the year, that was an incredibly good year for us, and it fills me with so much enthusiasm, and I'm so jazzed and just ready to work on all this For Planet stuff. So, because I have so much motivation for Planet right now, I have zero motivation for my day job. So even though it was only 4 work days long, because I flew home on Monday, this week has fucking dragged. It's just been so slow, and I have not been motivated at all.
That sucks.
I'm hitting, I'm actually kind of at the burnout point, because I just got done with For Planet's really, really busy time of the year, and my day job's really, really busy time of the year was immediately after I got back. So, it's been busy, but I haven't been that motivated, so I've kind of hated it. So I really need to just take a day off this weekend. We were talking about this earlier, but it's like...
You're going to disappear from the internet.
I really should. I should take a day where I'm not connected at all, you know, where I'm not checking Twitter, I'm not replying to email, I'm not working on layouts or anything like that. No, I was just going to say, maybe I just read a book for myself that's not company related, you know, just something that I want to read, have a cup of tea, smoke some hookah.
I was going to say, you should be connected enough to get in touch with people for hookah.
Okay. We'll do that. That sounds like a good idea. You know, but, so, yeah, I'm going to take a break. But, so, what did we, how did we want to do this? Do you just want to talk about
these? I mean, we're just going to talk about, this is going to be one of those situations where our particular version of events for Anthrocon are going to differ wildly from a good chunk of the people that are listening to the show.
Right. Luckily, I think we have at least a couple of people emailed in with Anthrocon reports. Like it. So that's good. Yeah, because as dealers, you know, we're mostly in the same place all weekend. And, yeah. So we headed out Wednesday morning. Super, super early.
Yep. 4 a.m.
Yep. And we drove to Kentucky to crash with some friends there. So shout out to Ringtail Cafe.
They're cool.
They're cool. They're old friends of mine. It's a couple of times now that Saverin and I, or at least me, have crashed there.
Second time, I think, for me.
Yeah.
Second or third.
And it's nice because it's only like another 6 or 7 hours to Pittsburgh from there.
Yeah.
Longer unless there's a fucking wreck right outside the tunnel leading into Pittsburgh.
I mean, God, a two-lane freeway? Seriously.
Well, I mean, the tunnel's probably like 100 years old or something like that. But what was funny was, I mean, Google Maps is telling us, and we're texted to Tieran, oh, we're 6 miles away. We'll be there in an hour. Because that's what the Google traffic estimation was and the little red light on there. And it was fucked because they'd had a wreck that closed.
Right in front of the tunnel.
Right in front of the tunnel that closed one of the lanes.
Yay, traffic.
So, and this because we were arriving in Pittsburgh. We left, we slept late Thursday morning, so we left late. So we got into Pittsburgh at like 5:30, 6 o'clock, right at rush hour, because this is on a Thursday.
That was
so,
kind of the plan. It would have been okay if there wasn't a wreck.
Well, the plan in my head was to leave at 8 or 10 and arrive by, like, 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, but we both slept late.
But we slept late, and then it was like, you know, talking to Tieran or Buck about it, I can't remember who, it was like, you know what, last chance to sleep in before the convention. Actually, it might have been Growly that said that. But, because, yeah, you know, it's going to be fuck busy once we get to the con.
We slept into, like,
11, 9?
We left at 11.
Oh, okay. All right.
So we slept until like 9, and then we were like, oh, okay. Shit. Got our stuff together, talked to them for a little bit, and left. We weren't able to eat breakfast because we slept in late, but...
Yeah, so we just grabbed lunch on the way out. We actually left like noon, I think. But, so we got there on Thursday, we set up. This is how much shit we had this year. Previous Anthrocons, we've gotten everything that we're selling into my car. We took Panther's car this year. It's a little slightly larger than mine. But even given that, Buck and Tieran had to check Saverin and I's bags. Mm-hmm. We had overnight bags with us with like a single change of clothes and toiletries and stuff.
Yep.
And we had 15 boxes shipped to Pittsburgh directly from our printers. And the rest was in the car. So we've officially outgrown my matrix for this convention.
You need a minivan.
You need to put a hitch on your matrix and haul a trailer behind.
Oh, Christ,
what,
no.
What were... huh, why?
Putting a trailer on that on your matrix? That would be a terrible idea.
Okay. I've heard people say I couldn't do it. I've heard people say that I could. I really don't know. I don't know enough about cars. And I wouldn't do it without researching it first. But,
yeah.
But no, the actual plan is that hopefully if all goes well, Tieran and I will be in a house by the end of the year. So next year's plan for Anthrocon is to basically probably take like 3 cars, drive to a facility, and have a pallet of stock shipped to Pittsburgh. Because if you ship to the convention center, they charge $25 a box to open it. If you ship a pallet, it's $65 to unwrap a pallet. So for one price, I can have them, the union guys, unwrap the pallet and take it all to my table for me. Of course, it could be like $800 to $1,000 to ship the pallet, depending on how much is going. But, you know, we're paying shippers a couple bucks here and there anyway, so.
Yeah.
Might as well.
I mean, it's... Yeah, the road trip across America is kind of cool. But God, it takes a lot of time.
It does. And I'm not sure whether we'd still drive or not to save money on the plane. It would save money on the plane if Tieran and I both drove in a car. You know, because then one of us wouldn't be flying this way and that.
Does the, would the airfare expense make up for the work time expense?
I mean, if it was one person doing it, I would need Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday is PTO. So that would be 5 days of vacation used. If I flew, I could take either one or two. I definitely need Friday, but I could fly out Thursday night. Flying out Sunday night would suck. I'd probably still take Monday to decompress and stuff like that. So it would save me like 3 days of PTO.
And considering how tight your PTO is normally.
Yeah. So, yeah, flying might be a viable option there.
Yeah. But
just because AC is so far away. For the closer cons, we'd probably still drive.
As a point of reference, Anthrocon from us is 1,260 miles.
Yeah, it's about 20 to 22 hours, depending on stops and stuff like that.
And, like, you and I, on our way up, we stopped a couple times. But
not too much.
Like, when me and Tieran were headed back, he does not like to stop. Unless he wants ice cream. And he's like, fuck it, we're stopping for ice cream.
Did we stop for, you guys stop for Dairy Queen?
Yeah, I guess? Like twice.
Yeah, that's what the Dairy Queen charges were. Okay.
Like, I need a Blizzard.
Fucking Blizzard.
God, I've been craving a Blizzard.
We should make an outing to go to Dairy Queen sometime.
But, I don't think there's one anywhere near here.
There's one on Beltline, just east of 35. I used to work down there, and I would go there for lunch, and every now and then get a Blizzard.
Yeah, they treat you right, yo.
East 35 on Beltline?
Yeah, it's on the north side of the road. Unless they've closed it, but I would be...
I know I've seen one somewhere, so I know there's one around. But we can Google that after the show.
Yeah. But actually, at the con, I mean... Thursday night, we got there, got everything unloaded, got our table set up. Nice and easy.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm so happy. Tieran handled this, but we have our new banner that we have on a website. We now have printed huge image on this white table runner. We have new burgundy tablecloths that we put down. So the tables are now branded, basically. We're trying to... Because it used to be like, we'd have a couple people be like, where is this? And we'd be like looking around for a sign. And we had like a little For Planet sign. Or we had a banner that hung on a wall that just sort of blended into the background. Nobody really noticed
it. And you were like, we are the Tea Crimson Tables.
And now we have this fucking, the For Planet logo on that runner. I mean, how big is it? It printed pretty huge.
Probably at least a foot and a half wide.
And then like massive Fez and Rory next to it. So, it looks really good. And then we had, like, 18 posters on the wall behind it.
Yeah.
With the covers of some of our new stuff.
People were like, oh, my God, I want that.
Yeah, we can't... Can't do that. Can't sell the posters, you know?
But they certainly caught people's attention.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, as many people we've had asking about the posters, then there's probably a lot more people that didn't ask but noticed them. They noticed them from across the room. And that brought people over. I mean,
if you see a soulless, black-eyed otter thing that says Sampikos across the top, you know there's quality otter porn to be found.
Yes.
Well, and you guys have some really amazing cover art, too, on some of your books. So I could see those being really decent as posters.
We had that beautiful Ursa Major cover by Blotch.
Yes.
We had that as a poster. And I'd taken off the... ISBN barcode, the For Planet logo and the description, and I just left the title and the edited by Fred Patton. And that wasn't too intrusive because still need the title. It is advertising the book. But oh, and about that piece, we won the original of it in the art auction.
Nice.
So, I mean, it's not huge. The poster's actually bigger, but, I mean, it's the original real media piece of art. And I think it's cool that Tieran and I have a couple... of the originals for the artwork that's been used on our books. Like that. Because we have the cover of Roar 3 on our living room wall. which was done by Confused OO. And now we have this watch piece. And the Ursa Major anthology sold really well. Everyone should totally buy that.
A lot of stuff sold really well for Planet this year.
It's actually so good, it should win an Ursa Major.
Oh my god.
That'd be sort of redundant. Yo, dog, I heard you like Ursa Majors.
So you nominated your compilation of Ursa Major winners for an Ursa Major? Yes. So you could be double Ursas.
Yes.
All the way.
And then I'll have to edit the cover and be like, winner of the 2012 Ursa Major award.
God. They would do that, wouldn't they?
It, and then in 10 years or so, you publish an anthology of the anthologies, and you have this giant brick of a book that people can bludgeon people to death with.
Oh, God. See, Ursa Major phone book. In all seriousness, though, it is, like, the best furry stories from the last 10 years, and there's a lot of really good stories in there. Yeah. And we got all the original artwork that was published with the stories. Like, all the original artwork, artists agreed to it as well. So
neat.
It's very cool. And I'm also really happy with Roar 4. Buck did a really good job on that. You know, lots of good stories in that. In all honesty, there's a couple of stories in there that I think should be nominated for Ursa Majors. Since, yeah, we're not going to nominate the Ursa Major anthology for an Ursa Major. It would be very redundant.
It would be pretty funny, though, if somebody did try to do a campaign to do that.
Yeah.
We must nominate the Ursa Major Anthology for an Ursa Major for Best Compilation of Ursa Major Winners.
Oh, God.
So
it's so meta, but you can totally nominate the stories. And
so Friday was ridiculous.
Friday was absolutely ridiculous. We did like a con's worth of business on Friday.
Yeah.
And Zia posted his con report, and one of the things he said, he was right, it did not stop. It was all day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so I should say, five people at the Fur Planet table this year. Myself, Tyrion, Saverin, Zia McCorgi, and Buck Turner. And everyone busted ass behind the table. We just had so many customers. It was fucking nuts.
And the fact that we didn't have to wait in line on the Knucklebuster, man, bitches threw plastic like nothing. Mm-hmm. Oh, you take cards? Here you go.
Yeah. My old merchant system, the other swiper that I've got, it's tied to software on my smartphone, and I wanted to have that software installed on Tyrion's phone as well, because so that more than one of us could use it, and if one of us had to take a break, we didn't have to leave our phone behind at the table. And there's a couple of cons that he goes to without me, like RMFC some years in Furfright. Then it'd be handy for him to take credit cards, and they would allow me to do that. But they would charge me the same amount per month that I was paying on my phone. So that's not, like,
acceptable.
That's not acceptable. I mean, it's like, yeah, you could do that if you pay for it again. Like, and I was hoping it would be, like, a flat fee for an additional license. I mean, I would gladly have paid, like, $50, flat fee, additional license, put it on Tyrion's phone and be done. And they don't have that as an option. So I was like, that sucks. Well, now, you know, Square's app is fucking free. And I have, like, 3 Square readers.
And the readers are free if you request them.
Yeah.
You can buy the things at Target.
So, me, Tyrion, Buck, and Saverin all switched them. We had 4 people that could do it, and we had 3 readers. But, you know, that was more than enough. You know there's 3 phones at any given time would be able to swipe it and take a credit card payment.
And you can key into the same account off multiple devices.
Yep.
So, basically, everybody could swipe and process payments for Planet.
It really helps, especially at AC, because, you know, while we had the register for cash sales, we have 1 register, you still had, like, multiple sales going on at once, and it really speeds things up
way. Yeah.
And I think that's the only way we handled Friday. You know, I think we've gotten better at this over the course of the years with more experience. I mean, that makes sense, but, like, I never really felt like we were too rushed or that shit was crazy or I was just going to throw my hands up and cry or anything like that, you know? Like, it was busy, but shit ran smoothly.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's actually how I would really characterize Anthrocon this year. Right. From my perspective, Anthrocon was just smooth as something really smooth.
Right.
Yeah.
Well put, Saverin.
Smooth, the old phrase, smooth as butter.
You blew me away with your alliteration.
My metaphorical language usage. My word, good. Anyways, but yeah, that
smooth
was
smooth as
that was...
Patrick Stewart's freshly waxed head.
Oh, yes,
Mr. Clean.
You know, there we go. Smooth as Patrick Stewart's shaved bottom. No. But yeah, that was my perception of the con, that everything went real smooth.
Yeah, and
you know, I didn't, you know, Dorsai were not, you know, door Nazis. They, you know, I just badge that big green dealer thing, walk right through, no yeah. problems, no issues. Everything went smooth.
And I knew who was helping me and got all the information to AC earlier this year, or at least well in advance of their deadline, so that everybody's badges that were working the table were at dealer check-in, and they had all of our shit
ready.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like I said, it was super smooth, and real happy with the guys that run it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, dealers work hard. We're very busy, and we miss a lot being dealers, but one huge advantage is not having to wait in the regular reg line.
Well, I think, though, that they really had that shit tied down, too. Because when they were doing, like, pickup and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. When we were picking up and set up the table.
Yeah.
There was barely a line.
Oh, okay.
Now, I didn't go out there during the day because I was behind. Basically, I would enter the dealer's room, stay there until close, and then leave. But I didn't really get the feeling that there was massive long lines. They've probably really automated that system.
Yeah.
Quite a bit so that it just goes. Mm,
good.
You would think so, given how long they've had to kind of refine their methodology. Yeah.
Oh, so throwing it out there, they cracked 5,000 people this year.
Like 5,200?
Cool. No, it was like 5,144 or something.
5,179, whatever. It's
something like that.
More than 5,100, less than 5,200.
Yeah. But they had an increase in attendance of over 700 people.
Yeah.
So for a con, I mean, usually you think con's been running a few years, it's over 10 years old. Attendance kind of levels out at a point, but not AC. I mean, not this year. I mean, they've increased by 300 or 400 before, but I don't. To me, 700 people in one year seems like a big jump in attendance.
I will say though that they when they got the extra space that they did, the shoving Artist Alley and the art show into that other room, and expanding the dealer's room like they did, They made that room feel so much less cramped.
Yes.
Because
a lot of people thought they were going to fill every square inch with new tables. They didn't, and what they did, I think, worked very well.
They made the aisles wider.
The aisles are way wide. So much so that at some points, the fursuit parade was three suitors to a row walking through the dealer's room. So you imagine how wide an average fursuit is because of the extra padding and shit. But three suitors to a row could walk down that aisle.
Nice.
So you didn't have a lot of the crowding problems that you had at other cons at the previous cons because, you know, people could crowd around a table and there would still be plenty of space for people to walk back and forth in between.
Oh, yeah. You could have people at either table and still have a couple of fursuiters walking down and fucking around with people.
Yeah. And then there was also this massive center aisle that had the four, I think, big islands.
Yeah, I think there was, like, the Soap Wolf, there was a game one, there was Lagarda's Leather, and then
the fourth one was actually just miscellaneous artists. Like, they didn't sell the fourth island as an island, so they just filled it up with...
It was like a mini aisle, like a quarter aisle.
Yeah.
That had... Because that was where the Ring Talk FA guys were, a couple artists. There was a shirt vendor, which had your general... I sell these shirts at regular sci-fi conventions.
Oh, God, that's right. One of the massive center aisle was Off-World Designs, I think, the shirt vendor.
Like, and I thought it was weird as shit. One of the vendors this year was just your random anime person that had their just shit piled everywhere, random stuff in cases, random toys. It was one of those, this isn't furry at all. This is barely even anime. They were selling like hug pillows. I mean, it was anime stuff. It was anime product. But it was one of those, of all the other people that didn't get tables, you let this person get a table? How weird.
Did they seem to do okay?
I don't know.
I mean, well,
they were on an end cap for like 2 hours over, so I didn't see a crowd. I saw people walking around with the anime bags that they sell at like Akon.
Okay.
And they have the same anime con markup on everything, so.
Huh.
You know.
I'm only guessing here. I don't know what the AC Steelers staff does, but I can't imagine that they do a lot of research on everyone that applies for a table. It's probably a lot of it's first come, first served, and if you see random name,
that's an artist.
Did he Google that necessarily?
I don't have a problem with anybody having a table. It's just sort of, weird.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of miscellaneous non-furry shit in the larger discussion, because there's like people selling chainmail and leatherwork.
Yeah.
And sci-fi t-shirts and stuff like that. And AC's certainly a big enough con that they can diversify a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Nothing wrong with that. I think they're doing all right.
We're also a very geeky culture that's cross with a lot of other geeky cultures. So, you know.
As I've always said, furry is a meta.
Yeah, yeah.
Meta
like, fandom. One of the things I bought, you were like, God, it's like that was made for you, was the Nietzsche's print set. It's Ponies versus Daleks, and it's the main six pony characters defeating a Dalek in some way with their special abilities. It's very cute. It's like Fluttershy is making a Dalek cry for mercy by using the stare on it.
Felicity just blows one up.
Applejack bucks one. Twilight's using a shield, and she's yawning because the Dalek's extermination ray is just bouncing off it. Very cute, but I mean, combining Doctor Who and My Little Pony, and you're right, yeah, it's like, wow, that was like made for me, you know? Because I dig both. But, you know, and that's for sale at a FurryCon. So, you know, because there's enough crossover interest there to warrant it.
Yep, it's a bit of a melting pot. But, yeah, I mean, so our days were all pretty much sales. Our evenings diversified a bit, you know, we went to a cool room party with the Soulful Wolf guys.
Yep. And,
you know, rub elbows with artists.
It's really kind of, it's a very cool event, and you know,
drink delightful variations of Jägermeister taste.
It's very low key. It's not overly crowded. It's just chill out and chat for a bit.
I was gonna say to say it's a room party isn't really right. It's more of a reception in a way. People come in and they're very. They're, you know, quiet, low-key talking. They're a little louder in, like, where the bar was, but everyone was just low-key talking and chatting about books and business and all that stuff. It was not a room party in what most people would be like, oh, man, crack open that booze.
It's
Show us your first tits.
Here's here's the kind of wild shit that publishers do at parties. Last year, Brer and I spent an hour talking about accounting.
Well, and like this year we had a sort of and this year you were talking to another one of the Soulful guys talking about something, and then I was talking to another one about how for Planet does its printing system, how that goes around. I'm just talking this, you know, we talking about printing books and digital short run printing.
Oh yeah, I think you tweeted something like that about digital short run. Yeah.
It's just like, oh, yeah, this is how Fur Planet does this stuff. And this is how it differs from other publishers. But, you know,
everyone has a business model. And, you know, what we do works for both of us. And that's cool.
It was just one of those things that that's the kind of conversation you have.
It's not, woo, show me your tits. I guess it could be if we wanted to.
Saturday, we were just super tired. Kind of went back to the room a little while, flopped, had dinner. I went to the My Little Pony panel, which they kind of kicked off at the tent to the 10 o'clock time slot. At, like, the end of the freaking hallway in the exhibit space. It was kind of, I mean, it was like, the center is like 9 or 10, right? Where we went to that sort of failed panel. There was supposed to be a reading, but it was against Kage's story hour and nobody showed up. That was, like, at the end of the hallway, like, completely down all the way at the end. They had to, like, quarantine the pony fags. and that was pretty big. I mean, it had about 300 people. But 300 people out of 50, 200-ish. You know, it went all right.
There's also, I mean, well, how full was the room is another thing. I mean, there's only so many people.
There was plenty of seating left.
Was there?
Okay. Yeah. They gave them, I think, 3 room sections.
Mm-hmm.
So it could easily have fit probably 400 people.
Okay.
And the seating was not packed. But, you know, that's still a good turnout compared to last year. It's bigger.
There's also the fact that I saw some people loving this, some people complaining about it. There was a shit ton of pony stuff in the dealer's room.
There was only, I mean, I would imagine only about 15 to 20% of the people actually had the pony stuff. It just stood out.
Because
it's new product.
It's new product and they're very primary colors.
Yeah, I mean, on aisle A and the other aisle A and B, I'm trying to think here, but I think 2 people had pony, no, 3 people. Sigil Goat, I think her name was. Directly across from us, where I commissioned one of her little crochet plushies.
Oh, okay.
She had that. And then Shantae Howard had some stuff.
Did he?
Huh. And he was wearing a cheerily shirt all day. Sweet. And then Ajin was on that aisle. So, like, 3 people on that aisle had it. Next aisle over had a couple people. I mean, there was, like, 1 or 2 people in every aisle. But given the vast number of dealers, it... You know, there's tons and tons of tons and tons of just regular furry stuff.
Right.
So it's new product. And like.
So people bitching that it was too much or full of shit, basically?
Yeah, they generally are. There were people that was their thing. They brought pony merch. But then there was a lot of people that were just like, I have my furry stuff and I've got some pony stuff over here if you're interested. It's called artists like making money, and right now pony's still pretty hot. And if you like money, you go where the money is. Fandom purity be damned.
Fandom purity.
Yeah, and I say that, you know, imagine like 25 layers of quotation marks deep.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
My editor is. Crying.
Yeah. But it's one of those things that people bitching about that are just bitches and need to be slapped.
I haven't really seen any bitching about it. But.
So there's not a problem.
It's the invisible hoof of the market.
It's true. You know, this time next year, it might not be as popular. The series might be over and, you know, half the community will have wandered on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And it was like a million people suddenly neighed out in pain and were suddenly silenced.
Yeah. You know, so people were getting their money while the getting's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm still getting my money without pony stuff. The pony stuff was on my badges.
Yeah. It's like you can't sell pony stuff. You're a publisher. Hasbro would be up your ass so fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
I mean, like, I did see there was a girl who brought, like, 8 or 10 pony plush that she just marked 50 a piece, but they didn't have, like, they were all backgrounders and secondary characters.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't have, you know, it was, like, you're Cheerilee and Scootaloo and the Doctor and, like, not any of the main 6 because I sold those already before the con.
Right.
But she still sold out in, like, on Friday.
You know, what does suck is so many people did not heed the no copyrighted characters in the art show rule.
Yeah, so that was interesting. So, as vendors, we don't get to go to the art show very often. But that's why there's an artist and super sponsor reception on Friday.
Right.
So after the little soiree with the SoFulf guys, we wandered down to the reception. We were on the tail end of it, and all the cookies and cheese were gone. I was kind of sad. But that's when we as dealers get a chance to look at the art. Not even necessarily to bid, just to be like, oh, that's really impressive. But one of the rules that they heavily enforced this year was that you cannot have, absolutely not, any copyrighted characters in your art. That means no ponies, no How to Train Your Dragon Toothless,
No Balto,
no Lion King,
no Sonic, etc.
Yeah, so
video game stuff. And this has apparently been a rule for years.
But this was a year that they really kind of had to pay more attention to it.
Because a lot of people did pony stuff. Well, not a lot. There was a few people did pony stuff.
But then there was also people that did, like, Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon. And,
right.
And there was probably some Balto stuff in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, so there was all these little artists, please see art show organizer. Art show director.
I think. Yeah. They had torn off the bid sheet so that people couldn't bid on it.
Yeah.
At least you still got to see it.
Oh, yeah. They weren't going to take it down. And there was some really, like, that one glaze piece. It's like Celestia and Luna on, like, a serving dish.
Beautiful, yeah.
That was really impressive and probably would have gone for a lot of money. And it will go for a lot of money on eBay later.
On eBay.
And Anthropon will be getting a cut. But that's okay. It was one of those things where it's like, if they're going to police it, they should probably get someone that's very savvy to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because it was a bit inconsistent.
Yeah. Because there was some, like, the secondary and tertiary characters that maybe not everybody knows.
It's like, okay, that's obviously, you know, like, there's Final Scratch and a skeleton, which it's like the Scratch and the skeleton character from, like, some 80s rock album. And I'm gonna get, you know, someone's gonna be like, it's this thing, like Metallica, Ride the Lightning, or whatever. And I say that, and someone's like, no, that's a different band. And someone will go, my clitoris. No. But yeah, they should probably get someone a little more genre savvy to, you know, be like, alright, of pony characters, alright, that's Anther Queen Chrysalis, and she's showing her vag. She's a bug. She doesn't have a vag. Whatever. Just anyways, that wasn't flagged. There was a Toothless giving himself a blowjob or something in the adult section.
Well, I guess if you're Toothless, you're pretty good at that.
That was flagged, but, like, there was a Big Mac next to it just because it was a red Anther Stallion with a massive cock, but he had the collar on. So it was you could totally tell who it's supposed to be. But it wasn't pulled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just little inconsistencies like that.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, there's lots of neat stuff in the art show this year.
Yeah.
That I totally can't afford.
Oh, we got the Botch piece. Yeah. We're happy with that. I don't think Turin bought any other pieces now that I think about it.
In any event,
all of our money is tied up in printing books, so.
And then Sunday, we just packed up. Went to Tonic, ate at Tonic.
Yeah, I ate at Tonic a couple times this year. Tonic's nice.
It's nice.
What is Tonic?
Tonic is a bar and grill. It's right on the corner across from the Westin. And first couple years I was there, I kind of ignored it because it's called Tonic. It looks from the outside very bar loungy, right? And I didn't know for ages that they sold food. And now I'm really glad that I know that, because they have more seating upstairs than they do downstairs, and it's way quieter upstairs than it is downstairs where the bar is, and you can still get a drink up there, but they have, like, a lot of really nice food there. They serve poutine.
What is poutine?
Poutine is, like, it's French fries, but they're covered in, it's cheese and some meat and some kind of sauce with cheese. What is it exactly, Savern? Do you remember?
It's like cottage cheese.
Yeah, it's actually a Canadian dish. It's like a famous Canadian dish, and this bar and grill in Pittsburgh randomly has it available as an appetizer.
They're not that far from Canada. Lake Erie is, like, right there.
Okay, whatever. But,
well,
it seemed odd to me. But, you know, I'm glad it's there, because I was like, you know,
they're within the poutine infiltration zone. You know, within 100 miles, they have to have poutine or Canada's going to invade us.
Well, they better get Tim Hortons over there, then. I want to try some of these famous Timbits and coffee from Tim Hortons.
Oh, that's good stuff. Then again, it's different from what we have.
Yeah, anyways, that's what it is, yeah.
And that was pretty much it. I mean, I hate to say it, but our con experience was very mundane.
But at the same time, it was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Because For Planet had a really good year. We had 25 new products, and holy shit, we were busy, and we like to be busy in the dealer's room. And I thought we'd ordered enough. We sold out of Deep Dark on Friday. And I was like, fuck, we should have ordered.
You sold out of the Sampikos books. You sold out of Cat's books.
A bunch of stuff.
Sold out of Scappa's stuff.
Yeah.
But I would put this one criticism forth, and this is the gamer in me. I think it's time to hang up the DDR at the cons.
Mm.
Because holy shit, did that room smell?
Yeah, I guess I could see that more so than other video games where you're just sitting there with a controller.
Well, okay, so this is going to sound kind of funny. So at the con, we're indoors most of the time.
Uh-huh.
Filtered air. My allergies weren't affecting me. I could breathe. I could smell things.
The hall that the orange room in is massively high ceiling, and it's a very wide open space. So
yeah.
No so smells, really.
Yeah. But I could smell, and that's always a weird sensation for me because I normally can't smell a lot of things. But holy shit, I could smell, and that was like it was Sunday evening. I went to the zoo, and I went to the gaming room. Oh my god. The zoo smelled pretty bad, uh-huh. because that's the congregation area for all the unwashed smelly fur fags. And the washed ones, but smelly too. It smelled pretty bad in there. But not nearly as bad as the freaking game room did. And it's really because they didn't have a lot of air circulation in there. That room felt pretty stuffy. And there was a crowd of people around two sweaty dudes playing DDR on hard pads. And DDR is fun and great, and I really enjoy it. But after a weekend of people doing this for long periods of time, it's just man sweat, man sweat, man sweat.
It's going to smell like a gym in there, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. And then you got the dudes in fursuits doing it, so their sweat. Oh.
Huh. It's kind of weird. Like, usually I have time and I will go to the zoo or I'll hang around randomly in the Westin or something or chat to people in the lobby. I didn't do that at all this year. I think part of it was I went to bed fairly early every night.
We were pretty responsible.
We were pretty responsible, but we were also just fucking so busy during the day that I was exhausted by the time evening rolled around, you know?
I mean, and that's really a minor criticism on my part. I mean, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I could smell this weekend. You should probably work on circulating air better for breezing this shit out of these furries.
Was the DDR the only game in that room, or were there other games?
No, they had one, two. So they had a Super Nintendo with some puzzle game in it for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had Rock Band set up. Then they had a TV with Brawl, a TV with a PlayStation 3 that was turned off by the time I was there, because PS3 has no games, and a DDR setup.
It's a random smackdown to PS3 in the middle of the rundown.
An Xbox sort of off in the corner by itself with some dude who was playing Sonic Generations, which I'm like, that's a single-player game, you jerk. And somebody, this was kind of cool. It was really random, too. Somebody brought themselves a life-size Poppin' Music setup. So, hang on before you go. What the fuck is that? Let me explain. No.
When you said life-size, I thought you were talking about the other life-size thing we discussed at dinner.
No. None of that. Poppin' Music is one of those Konami Bimani-style games.
You're going to have to dumb it down even more for me.
Bimani is the series of music games that, in the U.S., only really received Dance Dance Revolution. In Japan, they also have Drum Mania, Guitar Mania,
Fuck Mania.
Was Karaoke Revolution from them as well?
No. There's a keyboard one, there's a drum one, there's a guitar one, there's a turntable. There's a turntable one, which is just escaping me right now.
Spin Revolution.
No, it's Beatmania.
Oh. Okay.
Where
really? That's what I call it when I'm home alone. with some Cheetos and porn. Oh, yeah.
There's also Para Paradise.
I heard of that.
Which was you move your arms in like a
gay motion.
In a very gay motion, but it's a hexagon. Use the first five panels, and you have to basically wave your arms through it.
Ugh, hexagon. We need to get those out of our country.
And Poppin' Music, which was a 9-key music game where you had this massive...
This is different from Poppin' Roxy's.
Yes. So, my desk here, the controller is
made of wood.
Yes, it is.
It has an iMac.
The controller here is about 3 feet wide.
Okay.
And the buttons are about the size of...
Your balls.
I was going to say a road reflector or lane marker.
Elephant's prostate.
But shut up. a lane marker on a road. The smaller ones.
Okay. So, all right.
Basically,
a huge controller.
A huge controller with huge buttons. You could roll a car over this thing. They're so sturdily constructed.
Okay.
And it's this, you have to basically flail around like a monkey on crack to play this game. And somebody decided to bring that. I thought that was a nice little offbeat
edition. Okay. So this isn't something widely available in the US, one of those, I guess.
It is incredibly Japanese.
There was a Japanese guest this year.
There was actually some Japanese... There was
apparently quite a few Japanese people.
Yeah. It was actually kind of funny because there was a couple of guys who were really, really interested in, like, the Barra style, the big manly muscle bear.
Frat House Blues
and the other one, and since then.
Yeah.
They were like, is this Japanese? And I'm like, well, yeah, the guy's living in Japan doing this. He's like, oh, that's cool. And one of the guys had a shirt that was like Kimono-con.
Uh-huh.
Which kimono is furry.
Japanese name for furry.
And so they have a Japanese kimono con.
Yep.
That's cool.
There's apparently a monthly or every now and then 1-day furry event in Tokyo that Shivers and Atomic Boy X go to and sell their prints and books and stuff.
Neat.
So, yeah, it could have been something like that. I'm not sure exactly. There is actually a couple of cons in Japan.
Well, Anthrocon's the big melting pot. You've got people coming from all over the world.
Yeah.
Because, like, there was this fine young gentleman with a very thick German accent.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't understand what he wanted initially. But then he purchased, like, a whole stack of books.
I am wanting the fuck book. You were like, which one? My stomach feels rumbling tonight. Sorry.
Like... I want the big, hairy, muscle man fucking. You understand the fuck? I want to see the
cat. You understand the fuck I am talking about?
In any event, he ended up buying an entire stack of comics.
Okay, awesome.
He just had to tell me what he wanted. In a way that my horrible American ears could understand. It was a little loud in there. So,
yeah, true.
I mean, but otherwise, all in all, I'm very pleased with how the con went. There was no major drama. Everything went smoothly. Thumbs up to AC for making sure that shit went smoothly. On the dealer side of things, I can't speak about the rest of events, but from what I saw, it went all right.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. We had a great year at AC. I'm very happy. We were talking about this before, how we were, like, worried the first year Anthrocon moved to Pittsburgh because, oh, we have to deal with the union, and we don't know how that's going to go. Still fucking love the union. You know, it's so great to just back the car up on the dock, and they unload all the shit, put it on a flatbed, and pull it over the table, and unload it all onto the table for me. And it's, like, it's all this work that we don't have to do ourselves, you know. Yeah. It's actually really cool. I'm sure it's costing AC $1.50, but you know, I think they're covering their costs all right. But it's really helpful to the dealers, you know, and yeah, we had a good time. I mean, we had fun hanging out with friends and having dinner and stuff outside of the con, and you know, we do actually enjoy dealing too, you know, especially at a con where you're doing good brisk sales like AC, where it's not as up and down as some other cons.
It's not like us sitting behind the table at A-Con.
A-Con, sure. That was like, don't name a furry con.
Nondescript furry con here. No. A-Con is a nice safe bet because it's totally not within your demographic.
Right, yeah.
And we're just like sitting there going, kill us now.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, so. But yeah, so not dealing with Anthrocon anymore, but Anthrocon,
at ThreatCon.
We had a good time, and we'll be shipping all of our pre-orders out in the next couple weeks. And oh my god, the pre-order and the shipping. So much shipping. So, should we pause and save now before moving on to email?
Yes. Okay. SS Sparkle Dash, the most realistic ship better ever.
You're what? Like,
okay.
What? Anyways, so we're going to take a break. We're going to play a fantastic ad you'll just love, and we'll be back with a selection from AdamandEve.com. Hold on to your butts.
Audible.com presents 50 Shades of Grey, the erotic best-selling novel read by Gilbert Gottfried.
My inner goddess has stopped dancing and is staring too, open-mouthed and drooling slightly.
Hear it the way it was meant to be heard.
Keep still, he orders, and slowly he inserts his thumb inside me, rotating it around and around, stroking the front wall of my vagina. No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to? I agree to the fisting, but I'd really like to claim your ass.
Famed voice actor Gilbert Gottfried gives a reading that can only be described as sensual.
Holy fuck, is this wrong? But holy hell, is it erotic?
Let Christian Grey seduce you over and over again through the voice of Gilbert Gottfried.
But when he hits my clitoris, I cry out loudly. Oh, please, I groan. Quiet, he orders. Not taking his eyes off mine, he scrunches my panties in his hand, holds them up to his nose, and inhales deeply. His hands reach around and touch my breasts, and my nipples pucker at his touch.
Holy shit, this is hot.
And we're back.
Are we?
Oh, shit.
Are your panties moist?
Oh, baby.
Was that hot, Webster?
Now, I really hope that none of our listeners have swerved off the road and died at this point. That would suck.
I threw up a little bit in the back of my mouth, but I didn't choke to death on it.
Good to know. So, going with 50 Shades of Grey, AdamandEve.com have their 50 Shades of Sex for their kinky bondage roleplay fantasies.
Wow, they really didn't try very hard on that title, did they?
No, not really.
Oh, well. That's okay.
Anyways, so I'm going to say that this week's item is the Tantric Satin Ties Collection. It is lacy cuffs, a face mask, and a whip.
You have my attention now.
Yes, it is satin ankle cuffs, satin wrist cuffs, satin eye mask, and they're cuffs with adjustable Velcro straps. And you get the pleasure whip.
Whip them. Whip the piss out of them.
So, if you like bondage play, this is a nice, inexpensive way to get it from AdamandEve.com. It's $39.95 with shipping and handling for $8. But wait! If you use our coupon code NOT...
K-N-O-T.
Oh! You get free shipping. Huh.
Saverin has confused himself. Error. Fox not found.
Processing.
Boop.
Processing.
Boop.
Processing.
Anyway, okay, so thank you for entering the source code and making sure. You get the discounts in two of the following manual gifts you spend 17 or more, the mystery gift and the Breeze Triple X Triple Feature. So, they've standardized the DVD. But it tells you what you're getting now. I just wanted to make sure that the coupon code worked. Anyways, you can get yourself some handcuffs and lace and whips and chains. No, there's no chains involved. For $19.98, free shipping. You get the free standard shipping. mystery gift, 3 free DVDs. Spend a little bit more, and they've also got a vibrating lace panty. So if you really want to go, if you want to, male or female, if you want to make them a trap, go for it. You can totally do that.
Sounds fun.
If you spend, basically spend $40 or more, you get the free panties with the vibrating bullet. But tantric ties, if you like your bondage stuff.
And I bet that they do have chains available, if one were so inclined.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
And we also sell a book called Handcuffs and Lace on For Planet, so if you're interested in handcuffs and lace.
People are like, not for rough play.
Yeah, I was. You mentioned satin several times, and I thought, but the rough texture of rope is so awesome against the skin.
Yeah, well, yeah. But hey, yeah, AdamEve.com. Give my code NOT. It's great.
It's K-N-O-T.
Yay!
So do we want to read a Anthrocon email from our
email? We totally
email.
Should.
Okay. We want to read an email from our email. With our email. Okay. I'm going to start just randomly here. Okay?
Okay.
On fanboyism. To the NOTcast crew. Hi, long-time listener, first-time writer here with a short con report and a bit of a question. Anthrocon 2012 was my first Anthrocon and my second furry con ever. I don't exactly know what I was expecting, but it certainly wasn't that. Oh my, wonder where this is going. I've only ever been to small anime or furry conventions, and I just wasn't expecting the sheer amount of people to be there. It was awesome and maybe a bit overwhelming. I mostly stuck with the people I already knew from before the con, but made a few friends as well during the weekend. Also managed to make it to some of the writing panels, which I'd been looking forward to for a while. All in all, a general success. However, I did run into a bit of an issue. I found myself unable to talk to most of the people I wanted to meet, shake hands with, etc. I did manage to speak with Fuzzwolf briefly without freaking out. I was that stuttery, nervous-looking otter. I remember you. So I guess my question is there a cure for fanboyism? I'm not normally shy with anyone else, even strangers for the most part. Lastly, because I couldn't find the rest of the cast at AC, I want to thank you guys. Been listening to you all since episode 10 or so, and the advice you all have given over the years have saved my ass several times already. So thanks. Keep casting those knots. Sorry for the wall of possible words, Whistle the Otter.
I was at the table, probably.
Maybe you were on a break or something at that moment. I'm not sure.
But yeah,
Or maybe Fuzz's glory just outshone you.
Yeah. Or I was just brain fried at that point, just kind of looking at my phone going, sweet embrace of death, take me now. No.
Come on, dude. This was Anthrocon, not Acon.
Well, in any event, when it comes to your artists, or in this case, people you're fans of, it really helps to approach from that these people that you look up to probably don't necessarily expect reverence. They want people to come up and tell them, hi, I really like your art, and I would, and blah, blah, blah.
And here's money for it.
And they really like to hear, and here's money for it. But when it comes to meeting people at conventions, it's always nice for people like us. I know that I really appreciate when people come up and like, oh, Saverin, I love the show. Keep it up. Blah, blah, blah. That's cool. I like to know that people actually listen to this.
Oh, my God. I really want to suck your cock. Here's some money for it.
Thanks.
On both counts.
But yeah, artists are people, too. And most of them aren't, you know, self-important assholes.
You get the occasional ones.
Yeah.
But, you know, just approach people at cons like anybody else. I mean, you know, I'm nothing special. I just, you know, we thought of this silly idea to do a podcast, so we do a podcast.
Just these guys, you know.
And, you know, running my business is just kind of what I do. And I'm happy with it and how well it's going and everything, but
I mean, but I totally get what you're coming from.
Yeah, I understand. Like, I remember my first con. I was, especially with artists, I was, like, really nervous about I wanted to have my kink drawn that I had just recently discovered I was into. And I was like, oh my God, this is kind of naughty and out there, you know? He's like, will you do a spanking picture? And now I know that is like one of the fucking most vanilla of
kinks. Oh, you went spanking? Oh, thank fuck.
I remember one time, this was years later, or just a couple years back when I'm way more comfortable now. But I asked Heather Bruton, I got a sketch from Heather Bruton, and I wanted a pegging picture with my character in it. And she was like, oh, thank goodness, something normal.
Nice.
Like, yeah, it's just like, oh, you know, it's a wolf and a random female furry, and, you know, she's pegging him. And that's just, that was like the most normal thing she'd been requested of her, that had been requested of her that day. And I'm just like, and now I think back at it, and I was like, yeah, MFM 99, my first con, when I was all nervous about asking someone to draw a spanking picture. It's like, yeah.
Well, see, I was the same way. ACO4 was my first big furry con, and I was scared to approach Eric Schwartz's table and purchase some Sabrina Online stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, super nervous about purchasing an ancient pin that Deanna Harlenstein did that was a little skunk girl. Super tiny with a rose.
Huh.
I still have it under somewhere. It was one of those pins that she produced way back in the day. And then, like, yeah. I purchased some Heather Bruton bookmarks. I still have to this day from ACO4 that she also still sells to this day. Funny how that works. But yeah, I totally know how super nervous you can be. Because I was there once. And it is a confidence thing. And once you realize that artists are people too, and
yeah.
appreciate the recognition, it's a lot easier to talk to them because they're fellow nerds
in a lot of ways. It gets better with age. It gets better. I mean, you said this was only your second convention. It gets better with experience. You just become more comfortable in that role, you know, when you go to a convention. And yeah, I can't think of any techniques or anything like that other than, I mean, just become more confident in yourself in a general sense. I mean, well, like I said, you're fine with, like, your friends and the people and, you know, and even random strangers and stuff like that. This is just going to take time. The more cons you go to, the more artists and writers and stuff that you're around and, you know, the people that you want to get advice from and such, it'll, you know, you'll get more used to it and the nerves kind of fade a little bit with age as well. So,
yeah.
You have anything to add?
My thought is actually, speaking for myself, I had it a little bit easier with, for example, Fuzzwolf, in that I got to know you guys in real life, in person, before I learned that you were all famous on the internet.
God.
Again, deploying massive quotation mark, famous.
On the internet.
Right, right, like being the best surfer in Kansas.
So when I went back and started listening to the episodes, it was really weird because it was something that I was really, listening to the show from the beginning, it was something that I was really excited and sort of fangirly about, but uh-huh. at the same time, I knew you guys.
Right.
So it was kind
and
of
you
like,
got to hear a lot more of us about us than you ever thought you would.
So I had an advantage in that in terms of seeing you as people before I got to know you as
right,
celebrities.
Right.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
No, it's just funny. I'm just like, oh, God.
I know you guys don't take it seriously. But my approach when it comes to, in general, because I'm a natural fangirl, it's what I do, I'm an enthusiast, is I embrace it. If I see someone that I'm really excited about, I try to be careful not to be like, oh my God, creepy, but I will go to them and say, I love what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then just sort of follow the conversation from there, if mm-hmm. there's a conversation or not. My biggest problem is actually, I don't buy art unless I know where it's going to go on my walls, because I don't want a closet of art that nobody looks at. So I'll wander through an artist alley and see art that I really, really like, but I don't have a place for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel really bad telling these people, oh, God, I love this. I'm not going to buy it, but I love this.
Yeah, if you don't append the, but I'm not going to buy this part, they might take it a little better.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I expect them to break out the spray bottles. Like, no, Don't taunt the artist.
Especially if at the time you're like holding a credit card in your hand and you're just kind of flicking it around. Be like,
the whole row is just like following it with their eyes. It's like, mine?
Mine? But yeah.
The scent of desperation was thick in the air as I flipped the credit card between my fingers. Do that coin trick between your fingers.
What's that behind your ear? It's my credit card.
But yeah, I sort of take the approach of these people are out there making money off of this. They want people to like what they do. So
yeah.
As long as you're not creepy and excessive in explaining it, they're probably going to take it pretty well and be people.
And also, don't walk up to an artist and stare. Unsolicited, just tell them, well, no one's buying your stuff because your art's kind of dated. I saw a con report from an artist. It was like, I did have this one weird thing. This random guy just said this to... This isn't me. This is the artist post about it. I'm just thinking like, wow. Just how rude. You know? Just... It'd be different if you were like, man, I wonder what I can do to improve my art. But this guy was just fucking said this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well...
Don't be a dick, kids.
Yeah, don't do that. I mean, there are artists out there, and you know it just as well as I do, who don't present their shit in a modern manner.
It's carved into a stone tablet or something.
Yes, and other things. But they don't present their stuff in a modern manner befitting our advanced, quote-unquote, fandom. We have, you can actually get books published. You don't have to have a staple binder.
There's nothing wrong with a staple binder.
Yeah.
For some things.
But it doesn't put forth a professional aesthetic.
Just don't go comb binding.
Oh, don't do that, kid.
Unless you're doing a craft book. There was a lady a few years ago that had this comb-bound book, but it was a how to make a fursuit guide.
That's
and
acceptable.
You could flip it around for reference and stuff like that. And I was like... That is a really good use of comb binding because it's like a textbook. It's like one of those lab books that you get in college.
That's acceptable.
So what is comb binding?
Comb binding and spiral binding are the...
Okay.
Like a spiral notebook.
A comb binding, it has a center spine and then has interlocking teeth to go through the perforation of the page.
Right.
Okay.
Flat. I guess what I meant was actually this was spiral bound, not comb bound.
Yeah. Well, comb bound, you see it a lot in like... For me, comb binding reminds me heavily of when I was a kid. The print office at my parents' old church.
Yeah.
That's when they produced new songbooks to be distributed, like little hymnals for...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they took places. That was what they used them when they wrote those shitty-looking brown ones that they always looked very old.
I believe, Tales of the Taipan and a couple of other fanzines back in the 90s did comb binding, and that's what I think of them as.
I have a copy of Taipan that's ring-bound.
Maybe it was ring-bound, but there was some fanzines.
Only reason I have a copy of that is that ACO4 is I picked it up because it was a dollar. I was that's interesting. Oh, it has Chester in it. I can pick this up.
Yeah.
I can't fap to this, but I could.
If I imagine him naked and wet with butter.
Did I ever tell you how I didn't know that Chester was male?
That was my story. Okay, so here's my story, is that very early on, one of the first comics that I bought in the fandom was Furlough.
Uh-huh.
And it was cool because it had a Ninjara story in it. And mm-hmm. I was following Ninjara. And all the way in the back, it had an ad for Havoc Inc., and Deck is in the background looking kind of what the fuck. And Chester's in the foreground on his knees, holding up a necklace or something that he's just bought, looking very, very feminine. And I thought, oh, she's cute. And then, so I bought Havoc Inc. issue 1 when it came out because I liked the art style, not really knowing who Terry Smith was at the time. I found out later. And I'm reading it, and I was like, oh, this is a dude. Okay. Flip. Flip. I'm straight. Massive air quotes at the time.
Right.
Oh, they're they're a gay couple. Okay, well, you know, I don't have a problem with that. And I just enjoyed it. And, like, I guess it was, like, in that first year that I kind of had the awakening that I wasn't entirely straight.
You had a quickening.
A quickening.
Lightning flash. There can only be one.
Cut my head off and a fucking rainbow shoots out and shit, I guess. The dickening.
See, my first encounter with Chester and Havoc Inc. was Akon 14. Uh-huh. Somebody had some random ass furloughs and stuff. It was, and Havoc Inc. It was probably Radio or Antarctic Press or somebody carrying that. Uh-huh. This was back over 10 years ago.
Yeah. I'm going to bet it was Radio because they, while Antarctic published Furlough, they never published Havoc Inc. That started after it became Radio.
Okay, so it was probably Radio they had a table, but I didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
I was just your nascent fur fag who wanted to get himself some furry stuff.
Right.
And I randomly picked up issue 4 when they're, like, rescuing their little mouse girl from ninjas or something like that.
Oh, right. Okay.
And, like, Chester has a helmet on, and then he's like this, and they're like, damn, he's all, that's fucking hot, flat-chested, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a hot chick. And then, like, later on, Little Mouse Girl's like, you're in real trouble, and my daddy's coming, kick your ass.
That's right, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
They're both, oh, God, that's still hot.
Damn it, what's wrong with me? Ah. I like the cover of issue 5 because he's basically naked and there's just like one on thing the... covering his... It's when the spider is bursting in through their tent wall.
Yeah. Good times.
Because I was like, oh my God, he's almost naked. And then later on I discovered all these great prints that Terry Smith sold. And,
yeah, it's like, yeah, she totally sexed him out.
Well, you know, the majority of hers are like... It's like the cheesecake pinup type stuff. And then there's like the one ultimate Chester drawing that's just like the, it's the most adult one she ever did. He's going down on himself and it's just,
oh, come. Yeah.
It's like, ah, oh, good times, good times. The day I discovered that on Furbid.
You masturbated for days.
There was a point where I lucked out and I got a couple of these old out of print prints. Fairly cheap. But there was a point where I saw some that were, like, really, really hot of him going for, like, hundreds of dollars. Because this was before, you know, FA and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It was before So Furry did pictures. And there's only so many places to post. And the old school artists back then didn't post anything online. The only way you could find them was buying the prints or somebody scanned them or something. Or the thumbnail image they put on the Furbid auction, they'd be like, oh, God, that's a really great picture. I really want that. You know,
it's a really great set of pixels. I hope the original was better.
But it was like, you know, I saw a couple go for like $140 for an $8 print, you know? Like, oh, yeah. Back in the day. Wow, sorry. We totally went like gray muzzle gas there for a moment.
Hey, you know, it's we've seen some shit. We've been around the furry community for a while.
God, I'm totally a gray muzzle now, too, because I noticed when I got my hair cut, like, you can see the gray a lot easier now.
You carry the salt and pepper look well.
Oh, thank you. I'm like, I'm getting used to the salt and pepper look.
Yeah.
Tira didn't like it when my hair was long, because it made the one white hair would be, like, really long and scraggly looking, but with shorter hair, it actually looks all right.
All right, so we should go on to the next email, because it's pretty late.
It's Friday. It is Friday, right? This week has been so fucking long that I'm like afraid to.
You go,
It is in fact Friday.
Come on now with the ringtail fucking.
Anonymous.
Sorry, we're doing Hollywood Babylon. Damn it! Anonymous. I introduced Sarah to that show, and like, it's good now. I have someone to share their jokes, but nobody else is getting any of.
I gotta catch up.
Yeah.
And then Tara Strong is going to be on Fat Man on Batman. Yes.
Let's go. Tara Strong on Kevin Smith podcast.
Nice.
That's going to be fun. Nice.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
When Kevin tweeted that he asked her to come on, she's like, yeah, sure. I was like, oh, it's going to happen. It's happening. Oh, God, it happened, and it's going to be out like next week. Oh, I can't wait. Anyways, fuck, we should get back to emails. We're just like this random tangent nerdcast tonight. Goddamn.
It's fine, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, so... Hey there, Nerdcasters. I was just looking for some advice on what you guys think I should do. My problem is sexuality. I'm just not sure where I stand. I'm 27 years old, still a virgin, frowny face. That's why mostly because I've never felt like I had any time to consider relationships. Currently, that is because I'm living with my parents and going to college. I was out on my own for a while with some roommates. After 5 years of that, my parents contacted me and said they wanted me to move in with them and go to college so I could get a better career. I said yes, but that's where I'm at now. The problem I have with this right now is that I'm extremely lonely, and I don't know what to do or where to go. I love furries, but I've yet to figure how much of a furry I am, what my persona would do, or anything. I've tried to find furry groups in and around Tulsa, Oklahoma, but they don't seem to be very prominent. I would also like to find someone to talk about sex and get more information, basically just someone I can talk about those things comfortably, but I don't know where to start. I hope this doesn't just sound totally random, but thanks for listening. Also, love your show. Keep up the good work. Sincerely, Anon. So...
How far is Tulsa from Oklahoma City?
Pretty goddamn far. It's like it's like the second largest city in Oklahoma, which isn't saying much, but it's the other large city.
Our apologies to all the Oklahoma first. Saverin's views do not necessarily represent
I
don't think they have more than 100,000 people. I could be really off. But I'm pretty sure that Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay, let me pull up my mapping program here. Oh, the last thing on here is an Outback Steakhouse. That's interesting. I wonder what that was all about. Okay.
Yeah. Tulsa, Oklahoma actually has a third of a million. It has 381,906. It is the second largest city in Oklahoma. So there. You got a town of nearly 400,000. That's a little bit smaller than Fort Worth, where I grew up. But you're going to a college, and unless you're going to some crazy, fundy Bible college, you should probably find yourself, like an LGBT, LGBTA, Lesbian, Gay, Transgender Alliance.
An LGBTLOL.
Sandwich.
OMG.
But that is where you're going to probably find people that can be sexually open in conversation and not be tittery, chuckly 15-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
That's your real-life stuff. And you'll meet some interesting characters there. As for furry groups, I know there has to be... like, at least some furries in Tulsa, or at least the surrounding area, because it's a city. There are furries mm-hmm. in the city. There are furry in city. You take furry out of country, you put in city, becomes more furry.
Okay, so trying to keep it sort of... All right. Oklahoma City, if you have a car, it is a less than 2 hour drive.
Okay,
it's 106 miles. So what I was going to say, if you can get to Oklahoma City next Saturday, OkaCon is having a furry barbecue on Saturday, June 30th. I think Saturday is June 30th. I hope I'm right about that.
I think it is as well, because tomorrow's the 23rd. And that's Saturday?
Yes.
Okay. So
Saturday, actually, June 30th, look up oklacon.livejournal.com. They posted this to their LJ. And this is just a shout-out for OkaCon and their event. I don't know if this will help you or not. I hope it does. If you're able to get to Oklahoma City, you will at least meet a bunch of other furries that are going to OkaCon. And being in Oklahoma, I would – if you're not able to make this, I would still strongly advise that you go to OkaCon just to meet 300 odd furries, many of them from Oklahoma City. Lots of us drive up from Texas. So, at least meet a lot of furries that are in the general area. I know a city like Tulsa has got to have other furries. You'd be surprised.
hold on to your butt.
Okay.
I'm looking here. There's the furry forums. This was posted back on July 20th, 2011. But I'm fairly sure that at least a Facebook group is still going to exist. There is... it is called the Oklahoma Furries on Facebook. You should check them out. Make a fake account if you have to. And you can hook up and see. As of last year, they said they were hosting a Wednesday night meetup at the IHOP on 31st and Memorial in Tulsa, Oklahoma, USA. Whether or not that's still going on, I don't know. But it's worth a look. I mean, a rudimentary Google search pulled this up really quick. And, you know, you just have to take a little bit of initiative to, there's a furries.meetup.com. Nope, not a meetup.com.
Furries don't really use meetup.com. A lot of bronies do, but.
Well, there's oklahomafurs.livejournal.com. The last post was on June 18th, 2012. So. There's posts every few days, it looks like. So
there's also just you know, like back in Jacksonville when like everybody thought they were like the only furry and then discovered holy fuck there's like a ton of people here. Is just kind of posting a meet. Being like, hey, I'm a furry, I'm in Tulsa, and I wanna have a fur meet at this place. At this day and time, like a restaurant, you know, Denny's on Saturday at 8 o'clock or something like that. And, you know, it might not work. It might work. You never know. You might only get a couple people. But, hey, you got a couple people, and then you'll just meet more people and more people. And, you know, this isn't true of every city, but I was like, Jacksonville, not exactly like a major, major hub of activity, but turned out to be a fuck ton of furries living there. And... Tulsa could be the same way. But I would give it a shot. I would post on a couple of the different forums and LJ communities and stuff like that and see if you can get some interest going. There's probably, you know, it's probably an Oklahoma furry group on for Affinity as well. Because each state does seem to have one. But I definitely recommend checking out OklaCon as well. It's basically the furry event for Oklahoma.
Yes.
Do that.
Yeah.
Another resource in terms of local for meeting geeks that could segue very easily into furry is to find your college's anime club.
Yep.
Not a bad idea.
Hang out with some of those people. That was how I wound up segueing into furry eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Was a friend who was big in the Spoon group at UTD, and that stepped my way into... the whole furry thing.
Spoon. And, you know, to get more involved in furry, you don't necessarily have to have everything nailed down. It's like, because even people that are in the fandom, there's all different levels of involvement. And you're talking about how much of a furry you are, and it's like, there's lots of different levels of that, you know. Not everyone is a costumer. Not everybody has a spiritual thing. Not everyone is into the comics, into books. That just happens to be what I'm into, you know? There's so many different aspects to furry that, you know, you can really have whatever level of involvement you're comfortable with, and that could change and grow or not over time, just, you know, depending on where you take it. But it's a very creative, very vibrant community with a lot of different facets to it, which is part of what's so cool about it all. So I wouldn't let that kind of stop you from being able to go and enjoy yourself and meet some folks.
And in terms of how far you have your fursona developed, I've sort of been involved with this group of people within the furry thing for 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a character or a species picked. At all. I sort of bounce between ideas, but I've never settled on one. But I figure I hang out with furries, I go to furry cons, I help run a furry con, I collect furry art and buy furry art and hang it in my apartment. Mm-hmm. I think I count as a furry.
Right, yeah. You know, some people are fans. They don't necessarily have to have their own character. And considering some of the horrible abominations of characters out there, maybe that's a good thing.
I still like my Quetzalcoatl idea.
Your what?
My Quetzalcoatl idea.
I think you've told me about this.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
I have as well.
So it was like, oh, my personal persona is Discord. I am a patchwork of different animals.
Yeah, basically.
Boy, it was, here it we was go.
A joke idea.
Wait, what's happening?
It's like, oh, boy, here we go. I am a third this and a third that and half that and two-fourths this.
I've described
it like... That's more than one.
I'm like 730... I'm like 35/7 of a full furry.
See, that was the sort of comment that actually prompted me. I heard somebody talking about that and thought, how would I put together all of the different ideas that I've had? So I settled on this, like, putting it all together, came up with something that was the bottom half of a squirrel, the top half of a rabbit, the wings of a blonde raven, and a turtle shell. And originally it had a pug's eyes and nose, but why? I decided to take that away. I described it to Halfwit at one point, and she immediately dubbed it a Quetzalfuck.
Yep, that sounds pretty fucked.
And, yeah, and you're just a little bit Native American, just like Elizabeth Warren.
Oh.
Oh, politic.
Yeah, politics. That was bad. I really don't think she should have been raked over the coals.
No.
Anyway.
That's a whole different thing.
Next thing you know, she's going to say vagina. And the.
Also, just so that you know, I don't have access to the emails on this.
Right. Okay. Wait, that's right, that's your iPad. Okay.
Yeah, this is mine.
Yeah, you should just pass her so she can read the one about neon lights and spinning rims.
Okay. Ooh, rims?
Yes.
Dear Notcast, 2 weeks ago on episode 181, y'all, mostly Fuzz, went off on a tangent about spinning rims on some subs' bottoms. While I can't help set something like that up, there is a type of rope light style product called L-Wire that fluoresces brightly while generating little to no heat. I've seen the stuff used to amazing effect in a number of the more artistic style bondage and suspension photos. So if you want to play Simon while spanking someone or have some neon rims or landing stripes, get a couple strings of this and go to town.
Panther is gesticulating wildly because she referred to something electronics related.
Oh, okay.
Incorrectly.
I should correct. There is a type of rope light style product called EL wire. Yes. I got a thumbs up.
What
so
did
I
you say? L wire?
L wire.
Oh, okay.
L wire.
It's like El Hajar.
El Taco. Mm. El Burrito. So, yeah, I actually have to Google that real quick. It's like, what's that? EL wire bondage play.
So what does spinning rims on some sub's bottom refer to?
We were talking about rims and like the spinning rims on a car.
Uh-huh.
And then I was mixing it up on purpose with a rim job.
Okay.
So it's like, oh, spinning rims, the lights.
Oh, okay.
The idea, somebody suggested I could play Simon while spanking. Just
oh. Boosh, boosh, you know. Nice.
Yeah.
I thought that I heard the episodes, but I don't remember that conversation.
I don't even remember much of it, but... Okay, so I guess it's... Excuse me. I'm sorry. I guess it's my turn?
Maybe? Okay. Read an email, Fuzz. Well, actually, wait, she just read it. So it'd be my turn.
No, I started, and then you read, right?
Yeah.
And then she read.
He read the first one and then you read the second.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're not in a circle. We're in a weird triangle shape tonight.
And I'm the long leg.
A very acute
triangle. Thank you.
My family thinks furry is bad. There should be a frowny face. To the editor, Token Fox, and somehow mixed up in this insanity female... I'm amused that even though Shiva's not here, that is still accurate. Let me just start by saying what an awesome milestone it is that you guys are approaching. By the time of this email, I'm still waiting on episode 181, so I will call it 20 episodes to go until your 200th episode. Ooh. Premature congrats are in order, especially since this one should be even more orgasmically epic thanks to the 100th. Probably means than the 100th. I don't know if we're going to even do anything special.
You guys should totally set up the Google voicemail thing.
I'll bring the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, and then we'll all drink it together and die forever. Since it's still a little soon, I honestly don't... Not just once. Forever. I honestly don't know if I am off topic or not, so I hope this gets read. My main problem is that my family believes that the furry fandom is a waste of energy group of people whose only purpose is to have fun, fuck each other, and not be useful to society, and that most of their ranks are failures at life.
Oh, so like most Christians.
Oh, snap!
Yes!
So don't put it that way to your parents.
Well, and then do a little hip thrust like Christian. Yeah.
Well, you know, I threw it out there because it's probably what they're giving you shit about. But that describes like every fucking group in the universe.
Yeah. It's what fandoms are.
No, that's what life is.
Well, and also, if they're saying that they do no good, then go point out the fact that Anthrocon raised like $20,000 for charities that do good to the world.
Oh, we're getting to that.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Okay. Yesterday, really June 20th, I read an interesting journal on FA by none other than Kyle Gold, and this came up because of a tweet that he made, that compared furries to Mormons in a sense that they both have a bad rep. It came at a weird time, too, because which I recommend everyone go ahead and just read like the last four entries on Kyle Gold's live journal, which is kylegold.livejournal.com. Saverin, put it in the show notes.
Okay.
It is interesting reading lately, and he's gotten some feedback on it. In the sense that they both have a bad rep. It came at a weird time, too, because my family made it pretty clear that being a furry is incomparable to any religion or any sexuality. The family argues that furries don't help out the community. The only major thing to give money to are animal shelters. That they all... Oh, there's horrible fucking liberals helping animals. How dare they?
Well, just keeping animals off
the... You should just gas them all.
Go on.
Well, I'm assuming that that's the negative attitude of the...
No, I was just gonna, we can rebut this once you finish reading the whole thing, because your parents are really fucking wrong-headed about this.
That they also won't... Oh, yeah, I remember reading this. That they also won't take their shirt off their own back to support other furs in need in ways like offering a place to stay or financial help. I tried to respond to the last one by saying that even in other groups you need to be established to be able to receive that kind of help. My family believes that the group in question should want to do that for you as soon as you're part of that group. Your family is stupid. Like they have done for complete strangers with whom they only had several mutual friends in a religious setting.
Well, pause for that. They're not complete strangers at that point. They have other people vouching for them. Saying, no, if you let Mr. Such-and-such from the church the next town over come stay at your house, he probably won't stab you to death in your sleep and fuck the cuts.
How do you know that that wasn't one of the major tenets of our religion?
Well, we're not going to talk about that. But that right there is hypocritical because you don't... You know, if your parents, like, picked hobos off the street and let them sleep on your couch, that's one thing. But if you know of this person via other means, they're not complete strangers, and you probably had them vouch for. Just right. Like you would expect anybody.
Now, to be fair, if you look at it from that argument, the same could be said for the furry fandom. If you're part of it and you've got friends, then probably there's someone vouching for it, so why not let them crash with
you? That's perfectly reasonable on any level within any community. Basic human nature. You don't want to let a random ass stranger into your house be a co-religionist or somebody in the same fandom as you. You want to know a little bit about them before you're, you know, letting a random person into your house because you keep your shit there.
Yeah. It's also just, frankly, I don't do that. There's too many horror stories about...
Well, we don't either,
the couch surfer that would never leave. Frankly, I think it's just an unreal expectation
to have ridiculously anybody unreal.
To just let random people that have one thing in common with you... Hey, I need some help. Can I crash on your couch? Oh, sure. This is what we tell people not to do, because they could be anything. Just because they're... Another furry or another Doctor Who fan, you know.
Yeah, and Panther tosses out there. So what if furry doesn't contribute to society? It's a hobby.
It's a hobby. Are stamp collectors contributing to society?
Holy shit, that is exactly what he said.
Oh, is it really? Wow. See?
He was, stamp collector mind.
He was trying to telefuck you, and he missed.
Yeah.
I
didn't have line of sight.
I will say that I agree with the parents on the statement that you can't compare furry to sexuality or religion, because it's a hobby.
Unless you're on NPR. they called Therianism a religion, a furry religion.
Well, I mean, it's a spiritual belief.
But it was really funny because when Guardian was over and we were playing DDR yesterday, he played part of the NPR thing that talked about Fernando's and Anthrocon and all that.
Yeah.
Oh my god, there was so much bad information in that. So bad. Anyways, continue reading the email, sorry.
Okay. Family beliefs, bunch of stupid shit, religion, more stupid shit. It seems like she may be right because I haven't experienced what they have, but I am not the only fur around, certainly not the only one in my town. How has the fandom come up to par with my family's expectations? They told me to educate them, but I have had nothing to educate them on. I need some help on this one, so give it what you can. Wolf trapped in a social prison of his own making, Raven. P.S. I have written in before under the name Azul. See episode 103. But times change, people change, and personas can change too, I guess.
Need they can.
Okay, so this email comes in literally after Furry's just raised in excess of $20,000 to donate to an independent business.
That supported us.
That was supportive to. Right off the fucking bat, not an animal shelter.
Also, animal rescues, that's a noble endeavor. I mean, do you prefer this? Oh, well, just put a bullet in this cat. What kind of human are you that
you don't shoot cats, man. No, you don't waste bullets like that. You just grab them by the neck and spin.
Jesus. No.
It's like how you do chickens.
And babies.
Fuzz is being threatened. This is concerns me because I'm right behind him. So I'm in the line of
anyways,
fire.
But I mean, it's like furries, animals. That's like...
And the doorknob scepter comes out.
What? Was it the cat thing?
The doorknob scepter.
Could be any animal. It works on puppies, too.
Fuzz,
I'm not discriminatory.
Just
I'll
stop.
I'll kill anything.
Wow.
Anyways, God, we're trying to put a good spin on this shit. You're not helping.
Yeah, spin, exactly.
I also specifically remember an instance where there was somebody who was stuck in one state in a really completely untenable family situation, mm-hmm. and people put together basically a fundraising event to help this person get to another state with a furry friend who was going to house them.
Your parents are looking for media examples, and there's just not, that's not the case. That's not how furry fandom, any fandom works. Stuff like, oh, let's help get such and such out of a shitty situation with his family into a place where he'll be safe, is stuff that's conducted in live journals and FA journals and not anywhere in the news. It's like, you know, you're not going to find stories of anime fans or comic book fans or, you know, any kind of fandom community doing that in, like, the news, because that's just not how things work.
Except Fernando's.
Well, yeah, Fernando's, because it was a big deal, and that's
a big
deal.
And also that Anthrocon is a big deal in Pittsburgh, and the city is really enjoys having Anthrocon there. That's why it hit the news in Pittsburgh, basically. But I'm going to give me a moment here for them to come to my brain, but I'm going to think of a couple of things here. So there's a dude in Georgia called Sporty Pup, who needed a heart operation. Furries raised money to cover his medical expenses. There are fursuiters in Florida who go to a charity called Give Kids the World, who visit like sick and dying children with cancer in the hospital to try and cheer them up. For years, the guys that ran the horse brutality suite at MFM always had a can out to donate to, like, a local HIV prevention charity and, you know, medical information network, that kind of thing. There were furries at MFM one year who had mistakenly left their car running in the hotel outside the lobby. Somebody had driven off with their car. All their shit in it. Girl was an artist, had all of her Prismacolors, all of her sketchbooks, everything fucking gone. Furries raised a massive amount of money, I don't remember how much, by the end of the weekend, with one dude writing a check for $5,000. So they made enough to get home and buy a, like, a cheap secondhand car. There were local furries here that got into a car wreck on the way to Mephit one year. And they passed the hat on that as well and raised money to, I think, fly them home so they could at least get home, you know, and get all the insurance shit and stuff. This literally is just everything I've pulled off of the top of my head as I'm saying this that I have witnessed at conventions and such, you know, in the last 10, 12 years I've been in the fandom. This doesn't scratch the surface of all the places that I'm not, where this shit goes on constantly.
I can also remember this time where there was a podcast where the the people who ran the podcast had their apartment broken into and everything stolen, and the furry fandom donated to get the equipment back so that they could continue contributing to people's well-being and advice.
There you go.
And we also raised money to buy Savrin a horse vagina.
Bring that up to your family.
You also were promoting donations to the hospice that helped your mother.
And also the Trevor Project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so there you go. I mean, that's a lot of stuff that the community will take care of its own if there is a genuine need. You know? This generally happens, and the people that are scammy, well, they get found out.
Yeah. The dude that pretended that he had brain cancer, and the furries came out and raised a bunch of money and flew this fucker around the world so he could go. He went to Furry Fiesta. He went to another con. He got to go on the Pop-It show, did all these great things for him, and then turned out it was all a scam. But the point of that is that furries raised, like, thousands of dollars to try to give their friend, like, one last hurrah because they thought he was going to die. You know, and it did get found out, but, you know, the fucking generosity of spirit was still there.
Yeah, so there you go, man.
Furry
fandom gets a lot of shit, but they'll take care of their own.
The thing is that the representation of the opinion of the fandom that some people have is just really wrong, you know? There's some people out there just have, like, a really negative perception of it. Like, excuse me, we're all fat and burpy and full of bacon.
Talk about spinning cats.
Yeah. We're all, you know, basement dwelling fucktards, you know, with, like, our hands in a Lyra plush and a fleshlight strapped to our cocks, and, you know, we're just really bad people, man. But, you know, the truth of the matter is that person, that fucktard, that waste of life exists in every community, in every part of humanity. Yeah. And they are greatly outnumbered by the normal, everyday people who are just enjoying a hobby and an interest that they have. And furry is a little different in other communities. Yeah, we're a little bit more open about our sexuality. We're a little bit more accepting, sometimes more accepting than we should be in some cases. Fandom's not without its flaws, but it's still been this really welcoming community. It feels like a big family. You know, and we, in general, watch out for each other. And it is one of the most creative communities I know of on Annette. And, you know, I've met so many great people in this community. You know, I've done so many things that I could never do anywhere else. And, I mean, what exactly do your fucking parents want from you? I mean, they want you to fucking cure cancer or something like that. Somebody will do that. They may be a furry, they may not be, but whether they wear a fucking fursuit in their spare time isn't going to affect how they do their job at curing cancer or whatever. It just seems like your family have really unreasonable expectations for what's basically a hobby.
To be fair, it could also be lack of knowledge, because what you hear and see is those examples. Right. The other thing that he covered that there haven't been any counterexamples of is the idea that furries are people who can't take care of themselves and don't have their lives in order. Which, I would say, right now, off the top of my head, I can think of someone who runs his own business, has a full-time job, and a partner of 10 years, who's able to support themselves in their apartment and are about to buy a house. Another who's making, has a position where he's able to take care of himself and his partner of 7 years, who helps his family run their business. A woman who's able to support herself and her partner of 15 years. So many reasonably long-term couples who are able to live on their own. I'm in a stable, relatively stable job, able to live on my own and take care of
myself. It's just one of those things that the whole basement-dwelling nerd is such a ridiculous inaccuracy. I mean, furries come from every walk of life. Nerds come from every walk of life. Yeah, in your case, you do live at home. But a lot of us, we're fully functional adults. We have our day jobs, we have what we do, and furry is just a hobby, just like going out.
I will say there's absolutely nothing wrong with living at home while you're going to college.
Yeah.
Especially in this economic climate. There's actually a lot of people that are even out of college, and they're in their mid to late 20s and have been forced to move back home with their parents because the job market just sucks so bad right now.
But yeah, if you want specific examples with which to educate your family, there are some.
That Panther cover... says he doesn't live in a basement at all. He lives on a first floor apartment.
He's apartment dwelling, not basement dwelling.
That's right.
Floor, that might as well be the basement.
See, you guys need to get a house with a basement and make the basement where he lives.
You know, it's nigh impossible in Texas.
And just have absolutely nothing on the first floor. Like, why is this empty? Oh, because we live in the basement of our own home. Ooh-ah!
See, no, then what you do is you invite your parents to live with you. So that your parents are living in your first floor.
No. They live in the basement. That's great. You flip it entirely on its end. No. You don't understand. My parents live in my basement. Where they belong beneath my feet.
Well, that was what Mitt Romney had. He said that he was living in his one of his son's unfinished basements so that he could register to vote in Massachusetts.
So,
anyway, sorry.
In any event, I hope that we have
I was forced to sleep in one of my Cadillacs. I was just so hard up. Anyway, go ahead.
You know, I hope that we have given you a plethora of counterexamples to your parents' incredibly silly expectations. And while we have couched it in language that might not be very nice to their ears, I'm sure you are quite smart enough to be able to take what we've said and package it into a much more family-friendly way to express what we've said to your family. Don't let them listen to this. Please don't.
Just yell, fuck the haters, and then piss on the living room rug. It'd be like I'm marking my territory.
Yeah.
Because I'm a lifestyler.
Don't do that. All right, so my turn to read email.
I'll stop being bad idea wolf now.
Yep. All right. My turn to read an email. Blagging? Hello, Nutty Casters. It's the Inky Otter again, this time writing in for some healthy advice. I know it's a bit off topic, but I figured I should address this sooner rather than later. Yeah,
on topic is unhealthy advice, which we usually get.
Eat all the bacon. A few weeks ago, one of the people in my local writers group attended a class in social networking. This included subjects such as status updates, blogging, and other such things and more, specifically blagging. How they can be a tool for writers. Well, this took off very well for many other writers in the group who subsequently started creating Blagger accounts, Facebooks, and other sites. Me, on the other hand, I'm not much of a social butterfly, but the idea gets stuck in my head like honey. idea did get stuck in my head like, honey, you should see a doctor. I had already uploaded my stories to both Ink Bunny and SoFurry as well as a way to build more readership. This whole social networking thing got me thinking. I mean, I already follow a few people on mediums like Twitter, including Kyle Gold, Notcast, or Koshy, to name a few. Right now, I'm excited about the prospect of blogging. I usually have a few neat ideas floating around in my head. I've also made a Twitter feed just for shits and giggles. It's turned out to be more fun than I initially thought. But now my social awkwardness and introverted self steps right in front of me again and makes me second-guess my ideas. My main fear is I could end up giving people the wrong idea. No, I don't shove my personal philosophies or political positions down people's throats, especially on public media. My worry is more about crossing that line from interesting into annoying. Could people end up thinking my blogs are more of a cry for attention? Is there a point where some could think of it just as trying to become popular? Your insights into this matter would be greatly appreciated. As always, I look forward to your words of wisdom, your loyal listener, Nicholas Scribetail. So, blogging, eh?
So, I mean, there's definitely some do's and don'ts with Twitter in particular. You know, if you've got any of those, I like this YouTube video, I played this game, I did this thing on this site that is inexplicably linked to my social media outlets, turn all that shit off.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah.
If you have a Tumblr...
I just did my taxes on H&R Block.
Yeah, if you have a Tumblr and every single goddamn post gets tweeted, I'm going to kill you. I mean, don't do that.
I just found a cock to suck on Grindr.
Well, it's like, you know...
Oh, no, my mom reads this Twitter feed.
You can link your Twitter account to, like, everything, too. You want to let people know what you just fapped to last? Well, click that tweet button off PornTube, and you can do so.
I mean, I think it's okay, like, Ink Bunny and I think So Furry... Or was it So Bunny and Ink Furry? Have this function where you can... hit the link and it will tweet that you just uploaded a story. And LogJournal does the same thing. And I use that sometimes when I'll just to call attention to the fact that, hey, I updated my LogJournal. Because nobody reads LogJournal by themselves anymore. But if you put a link to it, people will go to it.
Yeah.
And that's relevant because your journal or your story or something will be have content. It's content driven as opposed to just, I watched this video and I liked it, you know? That's just some of my pet peeves about Twitter.
You know,
it's probably a good idea, like you said, to keep your philosophies and your political positions off of it. I fail that test so frequently. I try not to be too over the top, but sometimes I just see shit that just pisses me off so much. You know, I swear to God, if I'm listening to the radio in the morning and it's a Republican trying to explain why they're not wrong about everything forever, it just infuriates me. And then I end up tweeting on the train. I'll be like, God damn this cocksucker, fuck.
You know, and I just cocks in hell.
Sometimes I just can't help myself. But yeah, no, you know, you're going to get the douchebags that are like I saw a journal tonight. From a friend of mine that was like, you know, my mate posted this thing that she was, you know, going to do a drawing for someone to get like a free commission. And somebody tweeted, oh, you're just being an attention whore and doing this for more watchers. And it's like, not somebody tweeted, somebody replied on their submission. And it's like, the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
There's going to be random dicks that call you out. For anything, you know, even if you're not deliberately trying to be popular or whatever, you know.
As popular as popular could be. The kind of perfect.
The furry every furry should know.
Oh, God.
The furry every furry should blow.
And the other half of that is that while you get those douchebags who are like that, the majority of people, as bad as this sounds, really don't care that much about your posts. They're not going to put that much thought into it and assume that you're doing this.
Yeah. Take solace in that idea.
I read a million tweets a day that just don't matter. I make tweets a day that just don't matter to anybody but me. They're really just my brain farts. Sometimes they're funny. Sometimes they're insightful. Sometimes, majority of the times, they're a total waste of time.
And sometimes I put a post a funny picture.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big hat. It's funny. Yeah, but you know, if someone feels the need to just be a dick, it's just because they're a dickhead. So just to ignore the haters, so basically.
Also, when you're in a bad mood, don't post. When you're feeling sad and emo, and all you want to do is post a frowny face, don't post. Because that doesn't help anybody.
See, I disagree with that, because sometimes just getting something out there makes you feel better. And sometimes you'll get a response from somebody that also makes you feel better.
I would say if you're able to articulate why you're sad, instead of, I'm really down today, frowny face, live, post onto LiveJournal, post onto FA.
Well, the sort of post that's insert bad thing here in a way that sort of implies you're wanting somebody to ask you what's going on.
But I really hate that leading thing.
Yeah, this is just me, but you're going to get a much better reaction to say, man, I'm really having some rough shit. You know, I cannot believe this motherfucker said this about my mom or whatever, and it really bugs me. And people will reply, yeah, that guy's a dick. I'm sorry that happened. But if you're like, oh, I just had the worst thing happen, I feel so sad, and then people are like, what's going on? Oh, I don't want to talk about it. Well, tell me, frowny face. I want to slap your shit at that point. That's just me, though. I appreciate straightforward communication to a degree that most people don't appreciate it.
And don't be a passive-aggressive dickhead.
Oh, don't. Passive-aggressiveness is some bullshit. Don't do that, kids. Don't be like, my life is so much better now because I kicked that bitch to the curb. Or, you know, because, variations thereof.
Because none of us have ever done that.
Well, no, I'm saying that we're all guilty of it at some point in our lives. I'm just saying that it's something that you really should try to avoid.
Some do it more than others.
Yes.
Some are like the kings and queens of passive-aggressive posting.
But, you know, posting, man, I really wish that some people would go suck a fuck. That's passive-aggressive and makes people regard you, I guess, more warily.
I just regard you as a shit. Because, I mean, you could mean Rick Santorum, in which case I would agree. You could mean me. You could mean a friend of mine. You could mean your fucking cousin Johnny in Little Rock, whom I've never met and don't give a shit about. It doesn't tell me anything.
Yeah.
Also, sad face doesn't tell me anything. You know, it's just it's a cry, it's a desperate cry for attention.
I would say that the two versions of that that I actually am cool with is when people say, I have no idea why, but my mood has plummeted today. God, this sucks.
That's a perfectly reasonable thing to say, though.
And also, I really don't want to talk about it, but I've had a really sucky day and could just use someone telling me that I'm awesome.
And that is okay as well, because that is communicating that there's something wrong, but this is what I would like to have happen.
Right.
You know,
it's not leading. It's specifically saying,
it's saying, I really wish, you know, I want to be appreciated. I want to know that I'm appreciated, or I would like.
See, I don't even really like that. It's just,
but it's acceptable. It's in moderation.
It's a little better than just sad face. I don't want to talk about it. But it's still a cry for attention, but...
But it's a direct cry for attention. It is a moment of, this is something that I need, I'm asking for it.
It's like, my mood just hit a wall, that sucks. What the hell?
Yeah, I've probably... And
you've tweeted that, Fuzz.
Well, I mean, I've been depressed lately.
I know. But you said, man, my mood's taking a crash, that sucks. That's a statement, not...
I try to keep away from, like, just the passive-aggressive shit.
Yeah, it's not pity me, it's Twitter, it's a brain fart.
Yeah.
Twitter is not insightful commentary, it's 140 characters of you, you know, trying to put a complex conversation or thought into a very limited space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, don't tweet that you're pooping.
Oh, pooping. Poop's coming out. Plop. I'm a Twitter shitter. Don't do that.
You know, like in Robot Chicken, I just took a shard, a big, juicy shard.
Rock.
Also, because everybody occasionally does the passive-aggressive thing, don't do it when the person you're being passive-aggressive with follows you. Because I had a conversation with somebody at one point, and I was putting a lot of thought and effort into it, and then the next day I saw that they had basically summarized the conversation in a quote that put it in the worst possible light and didn't attribute it to me or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And it was a moment of, wow,
that's, you can go fuck yourself.
You can go fuck yourself. And I responded to it. But yeah, that's just crass. If you're going to call somebody out and they can see you do it, mm-hmm. be straightforward about it.
Right.
Don't fuck around.
I don't know what situation you're talking about, but I totally want you to tell me when we're not recording.
Dish sister.
Just so I can unfollow them. Isn't this cool how the scroll bars?
Like, I know it is.
Totally.
Have I mentioned so that?
So we get like two
iPad?
More emails.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah, we can do other emails, I guess. Okay, do you want to read about...
It's up to y'all, I mean.
Sure.
Okay. Right. Sorry, we got distracted.
We like to pontificate, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Dear Notcast crew, my partner of 14 years and I recently began exploring our own furry brand Holy of dom-sub relationship. Given that I am wearing a collar, we've begun attracting the attention of a completely different type of people. Mm. That's where my story begins. My alpha and I recently met a dom-sub couple who... Well, I'll lay it out. We first saw these guys in a bar. At first glance, the younger guy seemed barely legal, and the older guy looked like he could easily be my alpha's age or more. My alpha's 50, and I'm 33, by the way. It turns out they're more like 40 and 23. Anyway, we noticed through the evening that the older guy, D, left the younger guy, S, alone a lot of the time. S was sort of trawling for trolls and occasionally left with one of them, only to return a short time later. I didn't pay it much more mind, thinking maybe he was a hustler and we were mistaken about them being together. Later, though, S was across the corner of the bar from me, and we were sort of chatting. When S found out I'm a truck driver and could maybe help D get a better job, he became excited. The next thing I knew, I was talking with D, and S was talking with my alpha. Anyway, my trucking company offers a huge recruiting bonus, so I was more than happy to exchange some info and the like. After the bar closed, we were calling a cab like responsible drinkers, but D insisted upon driving us home. He seemed to not have been drinking, so we accepted. Back at the house, I was chatting with D while S and my alpha were outside smoking. S had asked D if this was to be like last time, and were we pairing off. D agreed, but I kept quiet, not wanting to offend, but also not wanting anything to do with this guy. After a bit, S seemed to be extremely drunk, so my alpha suggested they go find their beds, which they did. It was then that I found out that S had been laying out a schedule of sexual fees to my alpha. We were a bit put off, but since we weren't trying to get laid, we didn't concern ourselves too much. About a week later, D texted me that he was hiring in at my company, which I confirmed with recruiting. To satisfy our curiosity, as much as to secure my bonus, I suggested to D that we should get together on a more sober basis. He agreed, and we found ourselves at their home. Over dinner and such, D seemed to get the idea that our dom sub thing was leather-oriented, and that my alpha calling me his puppy implied leather pup masks and stuff. We let him think what he wanted while observing the situation, which seemed to involve S having some behavior modification due to some clue words like training and punishment. My alpha asked what S would be doing while D was on the road and offered him a day's work helping put some flagstones into place as a waterfall. D then talked about he had some work lined up, which seemed to involve skinny dipping and maybe more. We took this as a not subtle hint that D thought building a waterfall might mean something other than that. During the evening, my alpha and S had gone off to smoke a few times. On the second such hiatus, I guess the kid nearly cried when they were contrasting his dom-sub situation with our own. Needless to say, we're both very disturbed by this and haven't been able to get it out of our minds. It seems like S probably wants out but has nowhere to go. As it stands, we're going to wait until D gets hired and is on the road before calling S to build that waterfall. My elf is going to spend some time talking with him to see if he can get a more true vision of what's going on. If the situation is as dark as it seems, we would really like to try to help him get out. Unfortunately, we are both extremely wary of the potential risks, both from S possibly being a bullshit artist, or worse, and from D thinking we're poaching his sub. Anyway, I'll leave it there, but would be interested in hearing your thoughts. Your faithful, dachshund trucker listener, Finn.
He's a wiener dog.
P.S. I've always been partial to Fuzzle's voice myself. It makes me warm and moist in my nether regions.
Oh, my. Thank you.
So, that sounds kind of fucked up.
So, Saverin, you're the expert on Dob sub relations, being a fox and all.
not this style, no. That sounds like this other guy is using his sub as, like, a prostitute.
Yeah, I would say probably if they talked this out ahead of time and it was agreed to, then it's still illegal and questionable. But at that point, your best bet is to present this person with how a healthy relationship works.
Even like in your style of relationship, because not all relationships are the same, and yours is sounds pretty different. Not my cup of tea. But, you know, I think, like you said, though, that giving him an example of, well, I mean, this very dom sub thing, but at least we don't do, you know, this is how we do it.
Well, in any healthy dom sub relationship, both people's needs are being met. If one of the people is crying because they're presented with a healthier situation, that's not a good sign. It indicates that somewhere along the lines, that person's needs aren't being met.
Yeah.
So it could be, I suppose, that S at some level likes that and takes more from it than he would take not being in it. But really the best way to work around that or give him more options is to show him that there are other options. And then it's his decision at that point whether he's going to actually pursue something that doesn't make him cry or whether what he has is worth crying over. As bad as that sounds.
I don't think anything's worth crying over, but.
I have been in situations where a set of...
Rub some dirt on it. You're only missing a limb. Man up.
Well, it's... A conversation I had not too long ago was about the concept that in any situation where one person is unhappy parts of the time or is being mistreated, it has to be discussed and agreed ahead of time as to where that can be and where the limits on that are and where that person is okay having that. If the person doesn't have the conscious decision and acknowledgement that that's okay, and doesn't continue to be okay with that, then it needs to change.
Mm-hmm. See, even in my opinion, in a dom sub relationship, maybe especially in a dom sub relationship, everybody has to be equal. You know, you're role playing or you're playing this part, and it's part of how you're living your life, but you both have a say in how your relationship is going. Right. You know?
And if you don't, that's not healthy.
That's a major problem. Yeah. A dom sub relationship should not be a respite for someone who is unable to take care of themselves, basically.
Right.
To shelter in having somebody else take care of them. It should be for two stable adults with a healthy self-esteem each. And if a person is not at that level, then they need to get themselves to that level before getting into a dom sub relationship on either end.
And, you know, and while y'all are obviously older than they are, you know, I kind of think this 40-year-old, 23? That's really young.
Yeah.
And it just kind of strikes me like he poached this kid from some college somewhere.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, career day, he shows up. Want to be my slave? Yeah. Lots of butt sex and plenty of pay. cocaine on the side.
I'm not going to make all those assumptions, but,
no, but
some of it, it sounds like a pretty fucked up situation. But it sounds like you and your partner have the right idea in that, you know, your partner's going to get more information out of the sub. And because right now you have your suspicions. I think it sounds good if you really need to get clarification.
Yeah.
And if he clearly needs help, then you need to help him. Fuck what the other guy thinks. If he's abusing him, then
yeah.
It doesn't matter if he thinks you're poaching my sub or anything. I mean, like
what
that.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah. Well, that was just his assumption.
No, I just know the phrase. I'm just like, I've said it before and I'll say it again, that dom sub relationships, master slave, that stuff, I cannot grok it. I cannot understand that. That is not something I would ever want for myself. And so, just like the concept of in a relationship that's supposed to be a relationship, someone getting mad about getting poached, first of all, that's fucked up too, but it just, my brain, for all the shit that it has seen in this world, I can't mentally grasp that.
You could poach a sub in a hot tub if you leave it on too long.
Yeah, it's like an egg.
Right.
But it's a sub.
One interesting thing is related to what you said earlier.
That's just me.
I actually have some experience with dom sub relationships, and I find that sort of play quite satisfying. But one of the things that Fuzz said was that a dom sub relationship shouldn't be basically a haven for somebody who can't take care of themselves. The sort of extension of that is that a healthy sub, at some level at least, should understand that their submission is something valuable, and that if their dom is not being a good dom, then they shouldn't submit to them. That to some extent, a dom needs to earn the right to be a dom, needs to demonstrate that they are worthy of trusting that kind of submission to.
Yeah.
And it kind of sounds like this dom is probably not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, without knowing the details of how things developed.
Yeah.
Some guys have the wrong attitude entirely.
This is definitely a situation, though, that you need to make sure that all your facts are straight before you do anything.
Yeah, because on a level, you're fucking with someone else's relationship. So, better find out if this guy is actually really in trouble and really unhappy.
Yeah, I mean, make sure your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed.
Right.
And your best bet is just to be a healthy couple.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If that's what this person wants, then maybe that'll help them figure that out.
Also, for your trucker bonus, sometimes they got to be hired for like 90 days, no accidents.
Right.
I do a little hand motion that doesn't communicate because I'm on a fucking podcast.
I'm kind of in Zabrin's boat, though. Like, I like some domination stumps up play for like a like emphasis on play for a scene or a night or something I'm doing with somebody. But the being in a relationship like that, where it's like a 24/7 thing, totally not for me. I know there are people that do it.
That's fine. If it works for them and it's healthy for them, that's great.
Yeah. As long as it's healthy. Not for me. I'm just like, ugh. And there's a difference between, you know, like someone who's really doing this and all the fucking fake ones that you see on FA. I think this was on last week's show, that was like, there was somebody who was like living in their basement and they had their online army of subs, and it was just like, I see this shit all the time. Look at somebody's lame-ass profile, and they've got their fake made-up family on there, you know, of their little brother and their daddy and their puppy and their slave and their master and their slave and their slave and their slave. Uh-huh. And, oh, and I also have a boyfriend, but we don't live together. And I have a girlfriend in Canada. And, you know, and it's just like...
An angel wing and a demon
and
wing.
Yeah, and an angel wing and a demon wing, you know, and six dicks that are on my fingers. I guess I have six on each hand.
You know, I think
they come constantly. It's so hard to write or type because I'm constantly ruining keyboards.
And he has like five IVs that he has to drive around all the time because otherwise he dies from dehydration. And he has to eat like protein powder like fucking all the time because protein deficiency. And like he needs to take special zinc supplements because he's coming all the time.
You don't want to go blind. Do you know how messy it is to use an iPad when you have cum leaking out of your fingers constantly? It's like, I bought stock in Windex.
It's a good thing you have an invisible shield. So,
the condom.
At least I'm gonna say though that
just put the whole phone on a condom.
You know, at least when it's the online fake FA bullshit ones.
Then nobody is really being locked up in a dog cage in a backyard.
Yes. Life. I mean, at least in that case, it's just kids being dumb kids. You know.
Uh-huh. These kids may be in their 20s, but...
If you're younger than 25, you're not fully cooked yet. I'm sorry. That's just how it is.
I don't know. I have a friend turning 29 soon. It's just like... My God, what the... Oh, I
know,
hey!
I know, right? And he talks about, like, the craziest internet shit. Like, what the hell?
You know,
he needs some help.
Obsessed with little girls shows, too.
I know, right? That's totally creepy. Not at all like being a baby fur.
or like, me being into Mario Brothers.
Are you into Mario Brothers?
I played Mario growing up, yeah.
Yeah, that's not a problem. You know what's funny? I've never seen the movie.
I've seen the years. I saw it's the movie once, bad. And it was horrible.
I've heard that it's bad. I've not seen it.
It is, though, of the it's so bad it's good.
Okay.
Well, it takes that arc and then goes so far past it just loops back around.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like Battlefield Earth.
Yes.
You know, like buddy of mine and I went to see Battlefield Earth and our friends were telling us we were stupid and crazy. We're like, are you kidding? This is going to be awesome. It's the whole reason here in Dallas we all went to see Dragon Wars a few years back in theaters.
So bad.
And I was just like, wow, this is so awful. But we were so excited and happy. And there was like an Asian, I don't know, were you there with us when we did this? There was like an Asian couple, like two rows behind us. They were like, they got totally disgusted with us because like people were like laughing constantly because it was just so badly acted.
Yeah, we were kind of assholes.
And they just leave the main character. They just leave this poor fucker like in the middle of the desert, hundreds of miles from nowhere. And it's like, that's the end of the movie.
Well, you know that the movie only covered the first half of the book.
Oh, okay. Well, that'd be part of the problem. Also, I believe it was just badly translated from the original material or something like that.
Probably. I will say that the book did one thing that I've never, ever, ever seen in a book, and it won me over forever.
Oh?
Just that, you know, at the end of the movie, they've defeated the aliens and all of that.
Right.
There's aliens?
Yeah. In the book, it turns out that the aliens, in order to finance their mining and control of the Earth... had taken out a loan and placed the Earth down as collateral.
Oh.
So in the second half of the book, the Intergalactic Bank shows up to repossess the planet. So the second half of the book is the humans who have just defeated the aliens trying to battle the intergalactic banking system.
Wow.
And it's awesome. I loved it.
I wonder if they made a sequel that covered that part. So, anyway, was that our last email?
I think we can save the next one till next week.
Okay, sure. Yeah, it is 12:01 a.m.
Really? Wow.
It's Saturday, June 23rd, 2012.
It's Saturday.
Woo! Time to babble the fuck. Wait, no.
It is Saturday morning in Dallas.
Time to babble the fuck off.
Yeah.
Because holy shit, it's... This is a 2 hour and 19-minute show.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm about to make it a little bit longer, because I have something that I want to say, damn it. So, this is an announcement, because this will go out probably in a few days after I've done more of this. So,
yep.
For Planet is moving into a new area, which I'm very happy that this is working out. We are moving into digital comics, which, you know, we've been asked about a few times over the years. And we're working with a company. We've been accepted as a publisher there. That basically the format will be PDF. So, and it looks great on an iPad using, like, the Kindle app. You can use it on a computer. You can use it on, you know, an Android tablet, whatever. Probably that swanky new Windows tablet that's coming out soon. And we've started with Graveyard Greg stuff. So I've started putting profiles up on the site. We'll be adding Carpe Diem soon, and I'll be working with more of our creators to do it, to see if they're interested in doing this also. So if you've been looking for some For Planet stuff with the comics in digital format, we'll have that available. I'll be linking that on the website. I'll give you the link, Savern. You can put it in the show notes.
All right.
If you want, because we'll have that store up and running and everything. We already have two things on there. I'll be adding some more. And while I'll also be soon, hopefully in the next couple of months, have some time to sit down and do more Kindle layouts. So I'm planning on putting more of our titles out on the Kindle as well. So if you're interested in that, you know, check it out. Link will be in the show notes. And other than that, we got all of our usual stuff on the website. So, you know, feel free to buy some. Anybody else have anything? We don't have anything coming up, do we? No, because it's after Anthrocon, so there's like, I don't think we have a con to Rocky Mountain, and I'm not sure which one of us is going to that yet. You guys doing anything coming up?
I don't think I'm going to be doing Rocky Mountain.
We're kind of hitting a quiet time for the next month. It's a little bit quieter. There is Comic-Con in either June or July. And hopefully all our friends picking up some of the exclusives for me there. Soul Wolf's going to be at Comic-Con. So if you're...
Yeah, that's coming up.
If you're a furry and you're going to Comic-Con, go find the Soul Wolf table. They will have all their Soul Wolf goodness there.
Yay!
Random shout-out to a company, not me.
Shout-out.
Yeah, it's a shout-out.
From Wolf and Siren, get your cock out.
You haven't heard this other podcast.
So no, like, maybe Hollywood Babylon.
It's good. Good times. We'll have to do another podcast episode at some point in the future where we discuss different podcasts that we like and everything.
Yep.
But I'm ready to go ahead and wrap
on that note.
Good night.
And big balls.